Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Academy Awards ranked choice method of voting as an example of a model for American democracy, inasmuch as Academy members are able to express their true preferences voting with their hearts and heads. Rob Ritchie, the Executive Director of Fair Vote, joins us to discuss how ranked choice or instant runoff voting is being implemented across the country and is being considered for statewide elections. Then we'll look into the latest scandal in the Vatican that the Italian newspaper La Repubblica claims was the cause of the Pope's resignation. Francis Kissling, the former president of Catholics for Choice, joins us to discuss the alleged secret papal dossier about a network of gay church officials inside the Vatican who were being blackmailed by a male prostitution ring. Francis has an article at The Nation, A New Pope, African, Latin American, Woman, Nice Guy, Will Change Nothing. Then finally, we'll get an update on today's election in Italy, where the current prime minister is polling in fifth place behind the comedian Beppe Grillo, who drew a crowd of 500,000 in Rome denouncing crooked politicians and bankers. Domenico Lombardi, an expert on the ongoing European crisis that could be impacted by a stalemate in Italy, with the centre-left coalition barely holding on, while Berlusconi's Freedom People Party is showing strength as the scandal-plagued ex-prime minister offered a $5.3 billion gift of his own money to Italian voters, while running an anti-austerity campaign against the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Joining us now is Robert Ritchie, the co-founder and executive director of Fair Vote, formerly called the Center for Voting and Democracy. He writes, speaks, and testifies frequently on issues of voting and democratic participation. Prior to founding the center, he worked for three winning congressional campaigns in Washington State and for the nonprofit organizations in Washington and the District of Columbia. He's a co-author of two books, Every Vote Equal and With Stephen Hill, Whose Vote Counts. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Ritchie.
Thanks so much, Ian. Pleased to be on the program.
Well, bear with me. I've got a terrible chest cold, but just explain to us that. I mean, what we're seeing tonight at the Academy Awards is an example of the simplest form of democracy, the fairest form of democracy that exists, and I don't understand why we don't have it. So explain why it is so much fairer. And then why we don't have it?
Yeah, well, I'll first mention, and I'll get into the core way to change the vote first in a moment. But just the nominations themselves are actually done in a very.
Sorry,
shift phones. I don't know what happened there.
Right.
I was just saying the nominations are done by a form of proportional representation. So to get nominated for, you know, best actor or one of these awards, you need the strong support of about, you know, 15 to 20% of the Academy voters in that category. So they do that. So they get kind of a fair reflection of the full range of preferences that members of the Academy have, so that people all have like a stake in the outcome tonight. And then for best picture, which, of course, is, you know, the biggest award in most people's minds, and they have nine nominees this year. Rather than just vote for one and say the winner is the one with the most votes, even if that might be, say, only 15% or 18% or whatever might be the most votes, they use instant runoff voting or a ranked choice voting system where you get to rank your candidates. Actually, the Washington Post has a really cool app that you can go to their site and, you know, use the ranked choice ballot to get a feel for how it works, where you get to say, here's my first choice, but here's my second choice and third choice. So you do that as a voter, and then they use those votes, those rankings, to determine really who is the movie that balances having strong first choice support, like it, you know, has enough votes to get up there in the top, you know, two, three, four movies in first choices, but also is an attractive movie to supporters of other movies, so that it can get second choices from those that are getting knocked out during the course of the count. They do a series of what we call instant runoffs, where the last place movie is knocked out. You look at those ballots, you add them to the totals of the other movies. You end up getting down to two, and the winner is the one that more people prefer. So you end up sort of getting rid of the whole spoiler impact. And, you know, the next time you're thinking about a partisan election and thinking of voting outside the major parties or wanting to vote for someone you're not sure can win, but you really like them, this system allows you to do that without giving up a chance to indicate your sort of lesser of two evils choice. And it's one of the many good examples out there of this system being used and working.
And it does seem that the spoiler factor operates everywhere, does it not? I mean, throughout the country. I mean, an example, for example, is in the state of Maine, where the independent Elliot Cutler and the Democrat Libby Mitchell split the vote, electing instead Republican Paul LePage with 38% of the vote. And he's governed as though he had a mandate, despite more than 60% of the public actively voting against him. That's more common than not across the United States. It happened in 2000 with George W. Bush.
Right, that's the sort of with top of the heap kind of, you know, whoever gets the most votes wins kind of approach, and that's fine when you only have two choices, because whoever has the most votes will have more than half the votes. But if you have three or more choices, that first place winner, you know, they're in first, but they may actually be strongly opposed. And the main example is a great one, because it was like 38, 37, 20, something like that, and it was clear that if LePage had faced off against Cutler, he would have lost by probably 15, 20 points. And yet instead he won. And as you say, he's been governing as if he deserved it. And what's interesting is he's keeping his base relatively happy. So the polls are showing for his reelection. You know, he's at 35, 40% approval, which would usually mean that he would probably lose. However, once again, Cutler's going to run as an independent, and a Democrat will likely run, and it's quite possible that they'll split the vote again. So that's kind of an extreme example of how it can, you know, really just, you know, give us bad outcomes. But also, just any time that we want to consider a choice who we really like but think they can't win, a lot of people end up not voting for them, and that's sort of depriving us almost of candidates in the first place who might offer an alternative perspective, just someone who can say, I disagree with both major parties, and there's certain things that I want to raise and have our nation or our state have a conversation about, but we even like curtail the conversation because of a system that turns that candidate into a spoiler.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Ritchie, the co-founder and executive director of Fair Vote, formerly called the Center for Voting and Democracy. He writes, speaks, and testifies frequently on issues of voting and democratic participation. Prior to founding the center, he worked for three winning congressional campaigns in Washington State and for nonprofit organizations in Washington and the District of Columbia. He's the co-author of two books, Every Vote Equal and with Stephen Hill, Whose Vote Counts. So, I'm so sorry. So tell me, there's a number of cities throughout this country that have passed instant or ranked choice voting, like the Academy operates on. Minneapolis, St. Paul, they're apparently going to be electing their mayors with a ranked choice voting this November. Cities like San Francisco, Oakland, and Portland, Maine already have the system, do they not?
Yes. And in fact, that Portland experience is partly why there's so much interest in Maine in going to ranked choice voting, because they have this clearly broken situation in the statewide level, and they have had this great experience at a local level of it working in their biggest city. And, you know, they had a really excellent mayoral election. In fact, it was remarkable. They had 15 candidates, which is a lot more than you might usually have in any kind of election, but it's the first race for mayor, and a lot of people wanted to give it a shot, and ranked choice voting worked wonderfully. People, you know, turnout was much higher than expected. Voters handled the ballot. People felt the candidates did a great job of kind of reaching out to more voters, and that kind of experience is what has led people to think it would be a good thing to use statewide. And also, as you say, it's going to be used in the Twin Cities this November. Very interesting open seat race for mayor in Minneapolis, and they've used it in other cities as well. And I think, you know, Los Angeles is having a runoff election for mayor, and that does something similar, but a two-round runoff can also, at least for some kinds of runoffs, you know, have much lower turnout, campaign finance demands, it costs a lot more money to run. So it's being considered as an alternate approach to those traditional runoffs as well.
Well, Robert Ritchie, of course, in Australia, they've already for some time, actually for decades, they've had what they call preferential voting, which is the same, instant runoff voting, where you vote 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And, you know, in their last regularly contested parliamentary elections, they had an average of 7 candidates participating in every seat. You know, the Green Party ran in every seat, and, you know, parties on kind of the left, right, and center. And no one talked about spoilers, right? They could just run and contest and make their points known. And it's not proportional representation, which, by the way, for a legislature, that's what I really want to ultimately see, where, you know, 10% of the vote actually wins 1 out of 10 seats. But it's a system that at least accommodates voter choice, allows us to have a freer range of debate, and, you know, one that has been proven to work.
Well, in Australia, the Green Party, you know, of course, has a lot of influence because in forming coalition governments, they have a lot of clout. Whereas in 2000, of course, it was the 96,000 votes for Ralph Nader that allowed Bush to win by 516 votes, at least to a lot of...
Yep, that's exactly right. And what's interesting is they have this, you know, they use instant runoff, the ranked choice voting system in the House elections. For their Senate, they have proportional representation. Because the Greens have been able to kind of run and build support and not have people call them names, and, you know, they're now up to getting more than 10% of first choice support, that's not helping them win too many seats. They actually do have a couple seats, I think, one or two, in the House, but it has contributed to them building support in the Senate. So now they actually have, you know, a fair share of seats in the Senate, and that's where they can get all the more influence. So they kind of get two kinds of influence. One, in the House side, they can get their message out. They can force the major parties to confront what they have to say and, you know, change some views and reach out to their voters to be, you know, second choices. And then they can convert that positive response to what they're saying into actually winning seats in the proportional representation half up in the Senate.
So why do you think it is in the United States that we, even though we celebrate our democracy, we don't actually have a very fair system?
Well, we tend to be creatures of habit or whatever we've done, thinking that we have to keep doing. It's an important thing to always remember that we should be examining first principles and rules. And we have a great value of being an old democracy that goes back to the 1700s, but we have the great problem of being an old democracy that thinks its ways are sort of the way you have to do things. And we don't tend to learn a whole lot from other countries. And frankly, we don't learn enough from what we already do, which is that sense that we already have cities using instant runoff voting. We already have cities using forms of proportional voting. But we don't tend to necessarily think about that experience when we're, you know, wringing our hands about how bad Congress is functioning or frustrations with other parts of our process. And I think that if we open our minds, and that's what Fair Vote's really trying to do, people can check out a lot of good ideas and good ways of moving forward at fairvote.org. But I think it's this is a great example. It's sort of, you know, it's a very straightforward idea. You got to work on some of the implementation issues, make sure the voting machines get adapted to be able to handle a ranked choice ballot, and which they can. It just takes, you know, it takes some attention to those kinds of things. Then we can make this work.
And of course, given our system of spoilers, whether it's somebody that is splitting the vote, or in some cases the opposite party secretly funds the candidate that they think is the weakest. I mean, you know, if that was happening in the Academy Awards, the idea that you would tell a movie director not to make a movie because another director might lose their Oscar, I mean, that's ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that is a nice part of this system that, you know, that it's not something that there's been ever any successful efforts to try to game it tactically. The one thing that's interesting is that they don't use it for most of their categories, and that's because they actually want upsets. It's sort of exciting on Oscar night to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe that, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is not the best actor. Everyone thought he was going to be best actor. And he almost certainly would be, using him as an example. He probably will win anyway, but let's say by plurality somehow he didn't win in an instant runoff, you know, the right outcome kind of would have been delivered. So they actually want some upsets. So they don't use it for most things. But they do want it for Best Picture because they want to make sure the Best Picture really is the legitimate, worthy winner.
So, Rob Richard, just in the last couple of minutes, let's talk about the Los Angeles elections here for mayor, because it's just talk about voter fatigue already. They're having a primary election, and then in March sometime they're going to have, I think it's next Tuesday is the first round, and then later in March they're going to have, I guess, the runoff round.
I think it's actually like they wait a long time. They maybe wait a couple months or something because they have to kind of redo the ballots and send them out to people overseas. And it's an interesting thing because people are pretty sure you won't get a winner in the first round, but it will be a very important election for narrowing it down to two. But it sort of disperses the energy of the voters, because some voters won't turn out this week because they'll say, well, it's not the real election. That's going to be the runoff. But, of course, it's going to limit most of the choices people have in the runoff. And some of the races will be decided because if you get more than 50%, you're done. That's the California top two model for all your state and federal races now, by the way. It's, that first round that people vote in is critically important because it narrows the field to two and knocks out most candidates. And yet, voters were pretty uninspired last year in that first round and didn't really show out. So we need to kind of educate people. Whenever you have a runoff system, you really need to raise awareness that both rounds really matter. One alternative is to try to compress them into an instant runoff, and that's what San Francisco and Oakland and San Leandro and Berkeley have done. Four California cities now don't have runoffs, but instead use the ranked choice voting system.
But already, it's pretty clear that the race is pretty much decided between Wendy Gruhl and I'm sorry, I can't even think of his name. Eric Garcetti.
Oh, is it Eric Garcetti?
So the idea that they're going to spend twice as much or at least as much again. In following the first election, it just invites a flood of money. And, we'll get to a point soon where you're going to have to have $1 million to run for dog catcher.
Yeah, we came really close. There was a very strong effort to get instant runoff voting, ranked choice voting for mayor in L.A., and, both the AFL-CIO and Chamber of Commerce supported it, and your former mayor Reardon supported it, and kind of people on the left and right. I think Garcetti was a supporter on the council, and it just never. I think it was one vote short on the council of getting onto the ballot. So we'll see coming out of this election whether people say maybe it's time to just have a single round focused ranked choice vote. So people should keep in mind that there is a long history of the LA City Council debating this. It's a good thing to follow up with on people in Los Angeles. Well, there's a group called Californians for Electoral Reform, CFER.org, which is organizing on these issues in California if people want to get involved.
I thank you so much, Rob Ritchie, for joining us here today.
Thanks so much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Rob Ritchie, the co-founder and executive director of Fair Vote, formerly called Center for Voting and Democracy. He writes, speaks, and testifies frequently on issues about voting and democratic participation. Prior to founding the center, he worked for three winning congressional campaigns in Washington State and for nonprofit organizations in Washington and the District of Columbia. He's the co-author of two books, Every Vote Equal and with Stephen Hill, Whose Vote Counts. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking about a secret dossier which apparently contains the reasons why the Pope resigned.
You don't need to change. The future's ours. You don't need to change.